But what they did after that, I think is more interesting, is what they learned from that. They learned a couple things. One, by retraining folks for the next set of skills, they had higher levels of engagement. So they had people who were more engaged in work. That's a huge problem, especially if you look at the Gallup and disengagement. Two, they allowed people to take things that were outside of what they needed for their job. So they would say, okay, you're currently in this job. You have 75% of the skills you need for job B. So your pivot score is 75% or whatever it may be. All the skills gap is a human did something, we found it of value, and we said we need more humans to do it. That means we're making progress. And so we shouldn't look at it as something that is sort of punitive or catching up, but a way of life.
Dare to Learn es un podcast para los apasionados del aprendizaje. Cada semana platico con expertos y líderes de estas áreas para conocer sus estrategias, pero sobre todo sus tácticas para hacer frente a los retos del presente y para desarrollar a las organizaciones del futuro. Mi compromiso es compartirte estas tácticas y darte tips sobre cómo ponerlas en práctica mañana mismo y evitar así que seas desplazado por el futuro y las nuevas tendencias. Quiero que puedas hacerle frente y prepararte de la mejor manera para ese posible futuro que ya es presente. Esto es Dare to Learn. Hola, ¿qué tal amigos y colegas de Dare to Learn? Bienvenidos a un episodio más de este su podcast. Y un episodio súper especial, ya sé que casi siempre digo eso, pero en esta ocasión de verdad que es muy especial, menos especial para mí, y espero que lo sea también para ustedes, porque tuve la oportunidad de entrevistar a una de mis héroes personales del tema de learning, Heather McGowan. Heather es una verdadera apasionada, pero además una estudiosa y una experta, no lo puedo decir de otra manera más que literal una experta del tema de learning y de lo que tenemos que hacer los individuos y las organizaciones para reinventarnos a través de learning. Heather se considera una estratega del futuro del trabajo porque lo es, y es autora de uno de mis libros favoritos del año pasado, The Adaptation Advantage. Creo que fue el libro que más regalé el año pasado. Acabamos de tener un open discussion con muchos directores de Learning and Development. Tuvimos la presencia de Polo Cedillo para discutir este tema de The Adaptation Advantage, y tuvimos la fortuna de que Heather nos acompañara, así que me siento ya como muy cerca de ella y es como un sueño cumplido, ¿no? Personalmente, porque vengo siguiendo a Heather desde hace muchos años, cinco años, su trabajo, sus artículos. Ella tiene un background de diseño gráfico y hace unos diseños para expresar ideas que tienen que ver con el futuro del trabajo de una manera tan clara y sencilla que simplifica conceptos para que podamos desde ahí explorarlos. Y eso es algo que le súper agradezco y la admiro muchísimo por todo lo que hace, su libro, el continuamente estar empujando organizaciones e individuos a reinventarse a través del learning. Pues ustedes saben que esa es la misión de Dare to Learn, entonces estamos muy alineados. Siempre siento que tener estas personas que van mucho más adelante que uno es lo que nos inspira o me inspira a mí a seguir aprendiendo, y a Dare to Learn en general, a todos los que formamos parte de Dare to Learn. Encontrar estas inspiraciones y luego poderlas conocer, pues es algo maravilloso. Espero que este episodio les cumpla tantas expectativas como las cumplió a mí, porque después de leer el libro, los artículos de Heather, seguirla en los podcasts que la he escuchado y luego leer su libro el año pasado y poderla entrevistar y profundizar en alguno de los conceptos, pues fue maravilloso, ¿no? Yo creo que aquí en este podcast vas a encontrar una fórmula resumida de cómo ser tú mismo el que disrumpas tu futuro, el de tu organización, a través de esto del Adaptation Advantage. Habló Heather de los tres elementos críticos que se los adelanto, que es obviamente Continuous Learning, pero todo el tema de identidad, que yo llevo mucho tiempo también hablando de eso desde la conferencia Inc. en 2018, la que hice para Inc. Monterrey. Profundiza muchísimo el tema de tener identidades muy bajas y no creérnosla y salir de la trampa de nuestra identidad, y Heather lo menciona aquí muy claramente. Y el otro gran punto que yo insisto siempre que es el punto medular para que las organizaciones se reinventen y sean organizaciones que aprenden, el tema de los líderes y el rol de liderazgo, ¿no? Entonces hablamos de eso y fuimos profundizando en qué tenemos que hacer las áreas de Learning and Development, cómo tenemos que cambiar el lenguaje de cerrar la brecha de desempeño. Nunca la vamos a cerrar, pero eso no está mal. Siempre vamos a estar tratando de reinventarnos. El rol del Chief Learning Officer, que realmente se va a volver crítico en las organizaciones y nos hace tanta falta en organizaciones en América Latina, etcétera, etcétera, ¿no? Entonces aquí hay consejos a título individual, a título de si eres Head de Learning and Development, a título de si eres CEO. De verdad que esto de la ventaja de la adaptación de la que habla Heather, no por nada JP Morgan Chase, Zendesk, Microsoft, Autodesk, el Banco Mundial, buscan en Heather, tienen en Heather una consultora y una asesora de cabecera, ¿no? Porque realmente están dándose cuenta de que esto de learning y disrumpirlos a través del mindset de aprendizaje va a ser la única manera de darle frente al futuro del trabajo para individuos y organizaciones. Así que los dejo con Heather para que se vayan poniendo ese chip de aprendizaje continuo de por vida. Y espero que esta sea una conversación que los inspire más o cada vez más o por primera vez hacia ese mindset de learning explorers que siempre hablamos en Dare to Learn. Los dejo con la entrevista. Disfrútenla tanto como yo. Les mando un abrazo. Dare to Learn.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to one more episode of the Dare to Learn podcast. Today we have a great guest, Heather McGowan. Heather, thank you for being here.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have you, and a lot of the folks here, the listeners, know that I have mentioned you a couple of times throughout the years, and more recently with your book, The Adaptation Advantage, which I actually have right here. I've been rereading it for trying to make the questions, the best questions for you to share. But I think any of the typical questions we ask our guests will be great and different from your point of view. So let's just jump into it. The first question I always like to make to our guests is, what is something about learning, Heather, that after all these years studying this, it's clear to you and you think, and you are surprised probably, that it is not clear to others still?
Yeah, about, I want to say 6 or 7 years ago, I was sitting with someone at lunch and I said, you know what the problem is? We have been trapped in this perception that we learn once in order to work. And the reality is that we're going to work in order to learn continuously. And what I mean by that is, we've got this mindset that learning is the thing you have to get through to acquire a set of skills to do something, and then you put it behind. Whereas learning is just continuous. It is something that we're going to be doing all the time, an integrated part of work and an integrated part of how we live. And no matter how many different ways I say it, it's still not getting across. So I'm going to keep trying.
All right. Yeah. And you actually have your own work to learn. I would like to say movement, but it's also a company and et cetera. So I think it makes perfect sense. And a lot of my conversations in the past 2 years with CEOs and CHROs are regarding this, you know, like embedding learning in the flow of work. But we say that more than we actually do it or want to do it, mm-hmm. or want to take the actual hard work of doing it. So I think it's also, sometimes it happens with things like learning that it's fancy, but it's not actually happening, right? So I think I understand mm-hmm. your point. And can you tell us, like in a nutshell, in elevator speech or whatever, just for you not to repeat yourself, probably you do this a lot, about your story and the relationship between your story, you being here today, and learning, or the learning mindset or the adaptation mindset?
Sure. So I was just like everybody else. I thought I was going to learn once in order to work. So my undergraduate degree is industrial design, which is really design thinking before there was a word for it. And I worked in product design and service design and design strategy and design thinking. And then I was asking so many questions that seemed to cross the boundary between design and business. People said, oh, you need to go get an MBA if you really want to ask those questions, or if you really want to inquire about that part of the business. So I was like, roger that. I went and got an MBA. And in that process, I was like, huh, finance and how that whole world is kind of interesting. And so I did a journey that way. And then I was out for lunch with someone and I found out my undergraduate institution, RISD, had a center for design and business, but it was not conceived in the right way. It was really trying to teach business skills to designers rather than to infuse design thinking in business. And I joined forces with another individual who was reconceiving that. And then a professor of mine from business school became president of the university. And he said, I think you're onto something with this design thinking and business thing. Do you want to build a new college within the university? You want to help me reorganize the university? And I said, okay, that sounds pretty cool. And I did that. And then we wrote a book about it. And then I worked at another university. And then I did some management consulting. Point is, none of this could have been predicted. None of the dots make sense looking forward, only looking backwards, to quote, you know, Steve Jobs said that about his own career. And once I stopped trying to learn in order to work, and I followed my own interests and I followed what energized me, I landed right now as a speaker. That's how I spend about 95% of my time, the remaining 5% maybe on writing. But I learn for a living now, and I get people pay for it in speeches. But I never would have predicted that at the age of 5 or 6 when we ask kids what they want to be when they grow up. I never would have pictured that in either my undergraduate or my graduate degree. So I think my story is an example, and I think you could line up 10 people and 7 or 8 of them would have a similar story where they were not where they ever expected to be. And I think that's going to be true of more and more of us. So we've got to sort of lean into the uncertainty and pay attention to what energizes you. Don't think about what you're going to be when you grow up or what your major is or what your trade is. Because if you follow what interests you, you're never going to be wrong.
Yeah, I love it. Love it. Thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
I was, as I was listening to you, I was trying to remember in which book it was that I read. I think it might be Range from David Epstein, a great book also.
Sure.
That he said that a lot of outliers, when they are asked about how they ended up where they are right now, and so, well, mine was a very unexpected way of getting here.
Sure.
And 9 out of 10 answered that. So they think they are the exception when they are, that's actually the rule, yep. Right? So
yeah.
I love your story because I think you mentioned, like, if you ask everyone, most people will think that they are doing it wrong when they are actually doing it the way it is.
Yep.
So it's great. Love it.
And as the velocity of change continues to accelerate, it's going to be hard to say, I want to be an X when I grow up, or I'm majoring in this, or I'm joining this, or this is going to be my trajectory. You know, because the velocity of change is accelerated at the same time the career arc gets lengthened because human longevity has extended by at least a decade. So we've got to think of new models. And I think it's a focus on curiosity, passion, and purpose.
Great. And I think it's a perfect segue for the question that it's more related to what you just mentioned you are doing right now, speaking and writing. And, well, your latest book, if I'm not wrong, is The Adaptation Advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And can you share with us, probably you already shared some of it, what you just shared with us in the previous question, but what is the adaptation advantage if you are asked in the street? what would you say?
So as Chris Shipley and I were writing this book, I learned from my friend and mentor, Steve Spinelli, who is now the president of Babson College. He's the founder of Jiffy Lube. He's chairman of board at Planet Fitness. He's a really smart guy, entrepreneur. He said, you've got to come down, you got to bring it down to 3 points. If you can't bring it down to 3 points, you don't actually know what you're talking about. So we went round and round and round. And I said, okay, I think we finally landed on the 3 points that the adaptation advantage, and indeed, I think the future of work is, one, it's about learning and adaptation, just continuous learning and adaptation. And so much so that if we finally get it, we'll drop the word lifelong learning because it will be evident. We'll just say learning because learning will be lifelong. We won't have to use that word lifelong. Second, in order to do that, a lot of issues around identity. We have to let go of the way we've always done it. So unlearning is inherent. And we have to also let go of who we think we are. Because one of our greatest challenges is this occupational identity trap that we set up. We ask young kids what they want to be when they grow up. We ask university students to pick a major based on what they've been exposed to in high school. Huge social mobility implications and limitations there. And I am certain if I was limited to what I was told I was good at in high school, we wouldn't be talking right now. You know, so lots of issues around identity. And so you remove identity from this aspirational future self to a connection to what self propels you. And then the third piece of it is, how do you lead in this new normal? Because if leadership was, you know, set experts driving productivity, which is what it was for the last several decades, if not century.
Hola, espero que estés aprendiendo mucho. Enseguida regresamos con el episodio. Solo quiero quitarte un minuto para contarte súper rápido lo que hacemos en Dare to Learn, ya que creo que puede interesarte. Somos una firma que nos especializamos en ayudar a otros a desarrollar habilidades y capabilities críticas para el futuro del trabajo. Nuestros cursos te habilitan en 3 principales áreas: agilidad de aprendizaje, productividad y liderazgo.
Visítanos en daretolearn.com.mx
para que conozcas todos los cursos que tenemos en estas áreas que te van a ayudar a reinventarte y prepararte para ese futuro que ya es presente. Además, si estás en una empresa, date una vuelta a conocer lo que podemos hacer por tu organización. Más de 10 años y decenas de clientes nos avalan como el hub número uno de aprendizaje organizacional en América Latina.
Como agradecimiento por ser parte de la comunidad de Dare to Learn, te regalamos un 30% de descuento en el curso de Time Ownership en línea. Solo ingresa D2L Podcast, todo con mayúsculas, en la página del curso de Time Ownership y obtendrás este beneficio del 30% de descuento exclusivo para nuestra comunidad. Atrévete a ser dueño de tu tiempo, atrévete a aprender.
Now it's folks who can establish psychological safety, trust, to lead folks on learning tours, where they're comfortable saying, I don't know, I failed, let's find out. So the three tenets are learning, identity, and leadership. And a lot of that really focuses on getting much better at self-awareness, being aware of what you know, what you don't know, where your biases might be coming in, where you may need to unlearn something, where you're resisting change in an organization, even when you're leading it. So that's the heart and soul of the adaptation advantage to me. And we wrote it prior to the pandemic, and it came out right in the middle of the pandemic. The pandemic was declared March 12th, and the book came out April 13th. But I think we found our advice was kind of eerily prescient for the moment.
Totally, totally. I've been in a couple of interviews or events. You have been a speaker, been in the audience there and listening to this part of, well, we just released this, apparently you were forecasting the future, something like that, or what we will be needing. And I think it's great. I talked to, there's a guy called Mauro Guillen, he's a Wharton teacher, professor. He published a book last year, 2030, like forecasting the trends that are gonna happen. And talking with him, said, well, the only thing I regret about it is that I should have named it 2025, because now everything speed up. Everything I talked about, a lot of these things speed up like 5 years. So I think it's a great moment to read your book and to understand this. So learning, identity, and leadership. And I think I will focus right now. We talk a lot about in the podcast with our guests and in our content about learning how to learn, the kind of Barbara Oakley thing, which we have in the podcast, talking about the hard part of learning, neuroscience, et cetera, but maybe focusing on identity and leadership for our leaders out there listening to this. And I like what Paul Graham said about identity, that the more you have, the dumbest you are, or you become. And in organizations, Heather, what are the foundations that probably this normally is handed off wrongly, I said, to the CHROs, hopefully it would be the CEO. What are the foundations that people or that organizations need to take or to leverage to actually become adaptive or to leverage the adaptation advantage?
You know, I consulted for a company, and I want to say it was more than a decade ago, and it's just still stuck with me. And the company was a high-tech biopharmaceutical company, so that everybody worked there largely had their doctorate. So you had a lot of people who had been told they were smart their whole life. And that can sometimes be dangerous because you get the curse of expertise, where you funnel out information that doesn't comply with what you think you know. And they realized that as an organization, and so they set a requirement that to get above a certain level in leadership, and I think it was like maybe director level, they sent you through a week-long boot camp process where they would assess how much you rely on your expertise. Because if you have an over-reliance on your, you know, your doctorate thesis or the way you view the world, that sort of mantra, you know, if I have a hammer, everything looks like a nail, then you're going to lead your organization potentially in the wrong direction at times because you want to adhere to your expertise. And so if you were uncomfortable with failure, if you had an over-reliance on your expertise, you couldn't advance in an organization, which is the antithesis of the way most organizations work. They let people who are very deeply invested in their expertise that they've continued to, you know, upskill on, become leaders. In this organization, they said, we basically need more neo-generalists. We need more folks who are comfortable saying, okay, this may not fit my expertise, and this may be an area I don't know about, but this is an area we need to explore. And I think as more organizations look to the future, which is going to be, this isn't going to be our last pandemic. This is not going to be our last moment of uncertainty. The velocity of change is not going to slow down. It's only going to accelerate. If you take all those three truths, an organization, if you want to establish learning at its core, you got to look at your leadership. Because you can't establish learning at your core if your leadership is fixed on expertise they earned in the past.
All right. That's, yeah, I think you are. At the same time, when you talk about leadership changing, well, you're talking about identity change, right? And I don't want to forget this, even though it wasn't maybe on the outline of the questions I want to ask, but I sure. would love to double click on the part that you mentioned on self-awareness. Mm-hmm. So regarding the leaders, I think one of the hardest parts or the challenges is for them to actually have the hard conversations about self-awareness, connecting with what you mentioned earlier. And what would be your take on how to actually know yourself better and what to do after you actually get to know yourself better? Because maybe you will be surprised with some of the findings. I normally recommend to have some tests, typical tests, StrengthsFinder, Myers-Briggs, etc. But that's just one point of view. What would you suggest and what to do with the findings?
Sure. So all the tests are helpful. There's a bunch of them out there, and I think actually we could use some more because we don't have the perfect ones yet. So as you mentioned, Myers-Briggs, StrengthsFinder, Bassador Profile, there's a ton of them. And they're all helpful in one form or another. There's no perfect one. So yeah, there is no perfect test. The tests are really helpful. They can give you different types of feedback. I encourage people out there to create assessments, create more of them, because we don't have the best ones yet, but we've got some great ones. Myers-Briggs is a good one. StrengthsFinder is a good one. Bassador Creative Profile is a good one. There's a bunch of them. But beyond that, think about your organization, and if the leadership in the organization realizes that self-awareness in everybody in the organization is one of the greatest strengths you can make, because it's how you see your blind spots. So for example, in the book, Chris and I interviewed Dr. David Lewis and Alison Reynolds from Winter Business School, who said that actually accelerating learning, which is accelerating innovation, really comes from not only establishing psychological safety, Dr. Amy Edmondson's term, which is really important, but also cognitive diversity. So that's simply folks who think differently than you do. So if you think about your organization, you've got one person or two people kind of make you uncomfortable because they ask you a question you haven't thought about. Try to bring them, if they're respectful and they're not trying to sink things, bring them into your team because they're going to check your blind spot. So seeking out people who see the world differently than you do is a way of checking your blind spots, because self-awareness is about knowing your blind spots. That's one of the pieces, knowing your strengths, knowing your weaknesses, knowing when you're clinging to something, particularly if it's no longer relevant, knowing when you need to unlearn, knowing when you need to try something new, knowing when you need to get out of your comfort zone. Those are the real important parts about self-awareness, I think.
Love it. Love it. Thank you. And yeah. Almost all the time, things go back to leadership being convinced of something, and they have to try it first to sell it later, I think. And can you mention a couple of examples of companies? I know you mentioned quite a lot of them in your book, and throughout the years, I have heard of some of them in different, actually, books. You get to see them as a pattern, right? You are always looking at Satya Nadella's Microsoft, some of the things that Jeff Bezos is doing with Amazon. But can you share some examples, maybe the practices behind some of the organizations that you say, well, these guys are doing great?
Yeah, I know AT&T is often brought up as a learning organization, and it's brought up because they invested, frankly, $1 billion in creating this massive learning platform. Because if you don't know the AT&T story, AT&T was founded by folks who laid the copper, climbed the telephone poles, and built the infrastructure. They had a point where they realized that there are 250,000 or something like that employees. They had at least 100,000 of them that needed to reskill. or they needed to be replaced. And they went with reskilling, and in the process of doing that, they created this big learning platform. But what they did after that, I think, is more interesting, is what they learned from that. They learned a couple things. One, by retraining folks for the next set of skills, they had higher levels of engagement. So they had people who were more engaged in work. That's a huge problem, especially if you look at the Gallup and disengagement. Two, they allowed people to take things that were outside of what they needed for their job. So they would say, okay, you're currently in this job. You have 75% of the skills you need for job B. So your pivot score is 75% or whatever it may be. The other thing they said is take other stuff that might interest you. And what may be happening is they may be people sculpting their own jobs after their own self-interest because of where their self-propelled. The other thing they did is they said, for 3 years, you have a 100% pivot score to job B. Then they said job B is expected to last, or the market demand for this job is expected to increase until this point and then decline. And what that's signaling to them is it's not learning reskilling once. It's learning is going to be continuous, that jobs are going to continuously change and you need to change with them or ahead of them. And it's really important to follow what interests you. So I think that's it. That's an interesting example. The same sort of thing that AT&T set up, it's different. IBM has something similar. There's a company out of Australia called Faithm AI that's built a platform that helps folks use predictive analytics to reskill ahead of technological replacement. So if you're an accountant and your job is in the decline, I'm just picking accountants, I'm not sure if it's accountant, but in your job, you're going to need fewer accountants because we're going to hand off more to technology, but we're going to need more cybersecurity or data analysts or something else. They say, okay, your job's going to change. Here's a job you can reskill for ahead of that change. So we're going to see more and more of that. And I think the process of that is going to help people realize that learning is absolutely continuous and you have to connect to what interests you and what self-propels you.
Right. So I'm sorry, I'm taking the image out. I'm just so nervous right now that it won't work. And then I don't want to make you do the things again. So I'm sorry. I don't know what's happening. I mean, even if...
Do you want me to turn my camera off?
No. No, it's okay. I think it's working. It's working, at least right now. I don't want to say better because I think it's going to hear me and it's going to make me the Murphy law. So yeah, I'm sorry. So that... Thank you. That was great. Let's just continue. And if I'm starting to see that it's something going off, I will put the camera off. So that's great. And there's another important role here. Consider the role of the L&D function. And what would you say? Let's say that we have now the leadership check. People are leaders are realizing they need to do this. They have commit to make the investment of time, probably money, of course. Now we have the L&D fault. Me, myself, I'm one of those. And a lot of people listening to this will be L&D folks. What is that you recommend? What is the top three things to take into account, to do, to stop doing, to actually become a value-added function? This new era of adaptation?
Well, I recently wrote a couple articles in Forbes. I got another one coming out in a couple weeks called that basically saying that the coronavirus has ushered in the human capital era. So most of the value we made in the past, things, because we valued property, plant, and equipment, we valued assets, and we treated humans like a piece of machinery. We treated humans like a cost to contain. And now we're realizing that 85%+ of the value created in any organization is done so by humans. And then with that, we need to shift for humans not to be a cost to contain, but an asset to develop. And when you do that, then the learning and development function doesn't just become reskilling, because reskilling is frankly catching up. Skills gap is never going to close. It's never going to close. It's going to continue to widen. And that's kind of a good thing. Because all the skills gap is a human did something, we found it of value, and we said we need more humans to do it. That means we're making progress. And so we shouldn't look at it as something that is sort of punitive or catching up, but a way of life. So learning and development in an organization becomes sort of not this catch-up function, but this constant function. And it should be elevated. The CHRO and the chief learning officer should be like what the chief financial officer was to an organization after the global financial crisis. Because what the pandemic has done is it's taken what I thought was going to take 3 to 5 years and had it happen in 3 to 5 months. So the velocity of change is accelerating. Your skills gap is going to continue to widen. And then your chief human resource officer, your chief learning officer, become some of the most important functions in the organization. Because they're scanning the horizon, looking for new skills. They're also looking to invest in humans for all the things we don't know they can do. So a skills gap is codifying and transferring skills we know about that we know we need. But what about all the exploration for things we don't yet know about yet? So the chief learning officer looks at not only mapping the skills to the needs as things emerge, but also looking to invest in people to explore that horizon for the things we don't know yet.
That's very, very interesting. And I have my, do you know chief learning officers that are in the actual C-suite in companies? I haven't heard of that still, or that are reporting directly to the CEO.
Not offhand, but I've been championing it, so I hope it happens soon.
Yeah, me too. I agree. I see it. I was thinking of this area that also became very important in the last, 20, 30 years, like strategic planning. Mm-hmm. You have like a lot of strategic chief officers reporting directly in the CEO. I was thinking what you were mentioning, like scouting what's next. That's kind of the strategic planning, but now with the learning point of view, maybe we can fuse those two functions. All right. So what on a personal level, we have talked about leadership, organizations, HR, L&D, to the individuals, to everyone listening to this, you are an individual contributor, if you are in sales, you're in logistics, I don't know. What do you think is the main obstacle for everyone to actually become an adaptive person or a lifelong learner? And what is your comment, your recommendation to everyone, to any single individual trying to keep pace with the future of work? Because I normally said that we need to meet halfway, right? It doesn't matter as a leader or as an L&D leader, do everything I need to do, what we would just talk about. If you as an individual are not doing your part, but what will your part be in that equation?
We need a mindset shift on the supply side and the demand side. So when we think about how to become lifelong learners, we've pushed a lot of risk from the entity, the organization, to the individual. So the individual is supposed to learn on their own time after 40 to 60 hours of work a week. We've pushed the expense and the cost to them. We used to have tuition reimbursement. We don't have that so much anymore. And now we need to meet halfway. Because if you recognize that learning is the only sustainable competitive advantage for your organization, then you want to invest in humans to do that. You also want to attract humans who are predetermined, who are predisposed to learn and adapt. So you want people who are connected to their own self of curiosity, a sense of curiosity, purpose and passion. So they are primed to self-propel. So they're ready to learn, but you've got to support them in doing that. And that's sort of the big shift everybody needs to make. Right now, we're still largely looking for talent based upon past skills and experience. And if you start to recognize that most of the work we're going to do, especially as we hand off routine and predictable tasks to technology, is stuff we've never done before, you have to start screening for talent based upon people who have an alignment with your culture and your values of your organization, and they have a predisposition to learn and adapt. They're hungry to increase their capacity, which is increasing the capacity of your organization.
And so if I am an individual that I'm not sure if I have that, I don't know, I don't want to say that desire, because I don't think it's only desire, but I think it's probably the most important thing to have, the desire. Would you recommend some steps to start putting myself out there as a learner or what should I do? What will be my first step to realize maybe I am already, or if I am not, what should I do about it?
Yeah, so one of the kind of simple things to do is to sort of pay attention to your day. Journal at the end of every day, everything you did, whether you're working or not, and circle the things at the end of the day that gave you energy. They were the first things you did, the things you woke up thinking about, and start paying attention. What are those things? Because those are the things that are starting to self-propel you. And focus on opportunities that allow you to explore those things that you have curiosity about, you feel a passion about, things that are self-propelling you. Even if you don't know everything about them yet, all the better.
Before going, jumping to the closing questions that I have, I there's a concept I heard from you the first time in the Jacob Morgan's podcast, which I had the chance to have him also as a guest. And we mentioned this in his interview. So I think it's great to have you here now talking about exactly that. Because I heard you about talking the X man, you know, the X shape man.
Yep.
We have heard a lot in business about the T man. Then I heard about the pie, the P, or what we call it P in Spanish, pie man. And then you mentioned the X-Men. I said, whoa, that's great. I can picture that in my head. Then after I saw it in your post, and now you have it in your book, can you expand a little bit on that? Because I think it might be related to what this final last question I did.
Sure. So I kind of came up with this because I have a degree in design, a degree in business, and the concept of the T-shaped thinker kind of grew out of the design and business world, where we were long I-shaped thinkers. So that was just a single discipline identity. I am an X. X isn't the right word. I'm a banker. I am a lawyer. I'm a doctor. I'm a ditch digger. I'm a mason. Whatever it is that you have a single discipline identity, that is what you do. And then in the like 90s came up with this idea of the T-shaped thinker, which is basically saying, okay, I am a designer, but I can work with engineering and marketing to bring a product to market. And it would be much better if we work in tight collaboration, for example. So, but you still have that strong discipline identity. And I started to realize that the more complex the world we're entering is, it's not a complicated world where things break down into subcomponents. It's really lots of different things happening at once, flows of knowledge changing all the time around you. And so we need folks that can not only sort of collaborate with what's adjacent to them with a single discipline identity, but they can look at an opportunity with a transdisciplinary mindset. They can look at a situation and say, what's needed here? What functions are needed here? What kinds of expertise are needed here? And is it not only human perspectives and knowledge, but also what's the right way to address this? Is it how much do we need humans here? How much do we need technology here? So I say that we have to kind of stand at the X and look at something at the intersection of different disciplines and also the intersection of humans and technology.
Love it, love it. I love it that you mentioned technology because we haven't mentioned it that much, but it's a crucial part of the equation. And it's going to be more and more in the future. So, yeah, so the maybe some of the folks listening, the T-shape is because of the T letter, right? Like you have a horizontal range and now you have the X. And I love the thing that now you have a center to focus on where all these kind of things maybe that you mentioned about knowing yourself, trying to find this ikigai thing, but with learning, I think it's great. I love to see it in your book, and hopefully it will become famous in the very near future, so everyone can have a language or a code to talk about this. So Heather, what are your specific techniques to learn? That would be great to hear.
I think that my specific techniques to learn are to realize how little I know. That's the first place to begin. As much as I think I have ideas about the world, I really know very little. And that makes me wake up every day with sort of a hunger to figure out what I don't know and figure out where I might find it. So I read broadly. I follow a lot of different people. I'm always looking to question my assumptions and being ready to unlearn. And, you know, right now I'm a speaker. Who knows what's next?
Great. Where do you follow people? Like, what is your name?
I use LinkedIn a lot. I use Twitter to some extent. I'm starting to use Clubhouse.
Right.
So, yeah, primarily the different social platforms. And then I've built up enough of a following on LinkedIn that people just send me things sometimes in case I missed it. They're like, oh, you should see this. Or sometimes they send it on Twitter. So I'm very indebted to the network of folks with whom I collaborate on social media.
That's great. I always tell them that, like, you start adding value and then you'll get the most out of it because people start sending you things, like very curated stuff. So that's great.
Yeah.
I think it's a great learning technique. Maybe, I don't know if to call it a technique, but it's definitely a byproduct of doing it yourself. Right. And you just said, who knows what's next for Heather, but do you have any plans are you studying any specific topic right now to complement? Can we see a book in the future, or what's going on?
Well, I really think there's something to this human capital, or maybe not be the right word for it, but we have treated humans like machines. We've treated them like costume contain. And everything I'm looking at suggests to me that this is going to be an era of unprecedented human potential. And we're starting to realize one gift, if you take it that way, of this pandemic is we can't ignore structural racism, poverty, all the ways that we have underinvested in humans for all sorts of frankly stupid reasons. Diversity makes us stronger, whether it's cultural, racial, gender, neurodiversity. We're starting to see that. And so if we look at the human capital era, that the greatest investment you can make is in a human, in all humans, we'll start to see, I think, an unprecedented boom cycle. I mean, if you just look at what happened with the vaccine, we developed a vaccine in 10 months through global collaboration and leveraging technologies. Now, if we can do that, we can do anything.
Love it. And well, it will be great to see you work on that. And for you to be passionate about these things, it's what gives me the goosebumps in the good sense. Because I think we need more people being passionate about these things. Nobody, I don't know, I think I heard, you seen this Social Dilemma documentary? This guy that is the main character, he was with Tim Ferriss in his podcast a couple of years ago. And he said, we all think that Obama or someone is solving these problems for us. You know, somewhere in the world, but they are not. We need to take charge of it. So it's great to hear that you are passionate about this. I can read that in the beginning of your book, and we'll be very looking forward to what you discover and share. So that would be great to hear. So, of course, recommendations of books, persons to follow, documentaries, etc. Of course, follow Heather, and you can tell us where we can find you also, but what would you recommend, or who would you recommend to follow?
You know, this might be an unusual one, but I think Pixar is doing, the animation company, is doing some of the most important work out there. Whether you look at Coco or Inside Out or some of the existential explorations they're doing. I just saw Soul recently, and I don't think we're talking about it enough, but in the movie Soul, the premise is that we all get assigned a soul, and so there's the afterlife, but there's also the pre-life when our soul is developed before it's deployed for us to go to Earth. And one of the requirements for a soul to go to Earth is the soul has to connect to its spark. And that is what essentially self-propels it. And it's a really interesting framing to look at, because what if we made all our systems of education saying you can't get out of kindergarten until you find your spark? You can't graduate from college until you find your spark. Until you can find the thing that self-propels you, you can't advance, because in reality, that's actually the most important thing in a world of continuous change. And
love it.
So
love it.
I highly recommend seeing Soul. It's a cool movie too.
Yeah, agreed. And I just recently saw Raya also in Disney. And it I was amazed talking about people working together to do great things in a different way. These guys made the movie from their homes. So that was quite amazing, looking at what how they release a big production. Or they said that these guys were recording in their wardrobes, you know, the voices and stuff. So it's great. So yeah, I think we can learn a lot from children movies. I have two kids of my own, and I'm learning quite a lot just to see what the world is putting out there. So, well, Heather, where you already mentioned Twitter, LinkedIn. Shall we visit you somewhere else or follow you somewhere else?
HeatherMcGowan.com. There's information there. Follow me on LinkedIn. Drop me a note if you heard this and let me know what you're exploring. You can be part of my learning network. And thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Some of you, our most close followers, have already received a copy of the book because that's a way I try to put the word out in the world. So mention this to Heather as soon as you read it and listen to this. So thank you, Heather. Thank you very much. And as usual, and always to our listeners, Dare to Learn. You have already all the arguments here in this conversation to actually dare and go ahead and do something great. So thank you, everyone. See you next time.
Muchas gracias, Explorer, por acompañarnos en un episodio más del Dare to Learn podcast. Estoy seguro que, al igual que yo, debes haber encontrado muchísima sabiduría, insights y cosas bien interesantes que nos compartió nuestro invitado. Te quiero pedir un favor. Para que seamos más la comunidad de Learning Explorers, es importante que compartas lo que aprendiste. Para que seamos más los que estamos en ese camino del aprendizaje continuo, es importante que lo compartas con alguien que le pueda servir y que se trepe esta comunidad de Learning Explorers para que cada vez seamos más los que entendemos el poder transformador del aprendizaje, los que no dejamos de aprender todo el tiempo. Te pido que nos des un like, un review, o ya sea un comentario en tus redes, en las nuestras, donde sea que escuches tus podcasts. Lo importante es que cada vez seamos más los que estamos hablando de este tema, los que despertamos al poder transformador del aprendizaje. En Instagram nos vas a encontrar como DareToLearnMX, por si quieres también seguirnos por ahí. En Facebook y en el resto de las redes sociales, en LinkedIn estamos como DareToLearn, dos con el to learn es un dos, Dare, dos, learn. Y bueno, a mí particularmente, si me quieres escribir, me puedes escribir a diego@daretolearn.com.mx. Ahí me puedes mandar un correo, vamos a tener una conversación más personal. O visítanos en la página, ya la sabes, daretolearn.com.mx. Y bueno, con eso me despido, invitándote a que nos hagas saber de ti, a que nos hagas saber qué fue lo que aprendiste. Y antes de irme ya, ahora sí definitivamente, no puedo dejar de agradecer, como siempre, de todo corazón, a mi amigo de toda la vida y brother, Rodolfo Rudy Gallardo, que es el máster de la postproducción de estos audios y que tiene magia en esas manos. Ya sé que estos episodios lleguen a ti con la calidad con la que llegan. Si te interesa contactar a Rudy para algo de producción de audio, ve a produccionesorga@gmail.com, le puedes mandar un mail, o en Instagram como produccionesorga, O-R-G-A. Y bueno, sin mucho más, nos vemos en la próxima edición del podcast de Dare to Learn. Atrévete a aprender y gracias por estar aquí. Chao.